love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever and wherever it is that you're listening to us, we want to thank you in advance. We as fans have always appreciated your input as fellow fans. When you're happy, we're happy. When you're upset, we are too. But sometimes we're just a little bit more honest. We are the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine, and Cody Paulson coming to us from Houston, Texas by way of Ponte Vedra, Florida. Cody, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
Gentlemen, doing well. Thank you again for having me on. You guys can find me on Twitter at @TheCodyPaulson. Let's start tweeting about Sox, man. A lot of good energy around the team right now. A lot of fun things to talk about. Terry, how are you doing?
I am living the life down here in Myrtle Beach, thinking about going to the ocean for the first time tomorrow. So the temperature in the water down here is about 71, 72 degrees. So unlike Maine, you don't go into like immediate shock as soon as you jump in due to the cold temperatures. So looking forward to that. Quick check of the standings. Red Sox are currently in fourth place after a 2-1 series victory over the Philadelphia Phillies. They are 7.5 games back from the division leading Tampa Bay Rays. They only lost one game this weekend, and it looks like the Red Sox are actually in third place for the wild card now that I look at it. Toronto a half a game ahead of the Red Sox, but still one of the best records in Major League Baseball. Three of the four best are in the AL East. So playing way over their heads, certainly doing better than I thought they would. And we got, as a special bonus, we've got James Paxton being activated on Tuesday. Not clear when he'll make his first start, but I bet he does not last long on the roster.
Yeah, speaking of betting, real quick for you folks. Attention Massachusetts and Connecticut listeners. We have an awesome limited time promo for new DraftKings users. Pause and place a $5 wager on any sport to get $150 instantly added to your account in bonus bets. Win or lose. All you have to do is use our code BASTARDS at sign up to redeem. Using our code BASTARDS is a great way to support the pod. So if you don't yet have a DraftKings account, do us a solid and sign up with code BASTARDS and place that first bet. New customers only, 21 and older, and physically present in Massachusetts or Connecticut. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050. Valid. One offer per customer. Minimum $5 deposit and $5 wager required. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable.
And Charlie is frozen. So the tail end of that ad, you have to be physically present in both Massachusetts and Connecticut to be eligible for the bonus. So, and Charlie is back. He actually flew from California back to Rhode Island, so not his current situation, but how are we, Charlie? We just got the ad finished.
We just got the ad finished. And Terry, one thing I was going to ask you before I got cut out for a brief second is, where can the fans find you on Twitter, just so we can follow the same cadence?
You can find me in all of my mischief at CushmanMLB.
I love it. I love it. So this is going to be really, really fun. Naturally, as the Red Sox were able to pull this one out, we're going to be doing studs and duds to start. Terry, we're going to let you go first with your stud. I'm really looking forward to this segment tonight for multiple reasons, but I really want to hear who you have for your stud. Go ahead. Lead us off.
I am going with Big Papi Jr., Rafi Devers. He's really started to turn it around the last few weeks, hitting pretty well in clutch situations, especially Saturday night. He kind of broke the game open a little bit with a double, which was a line drive into left center that scored a couple of runs. That was off of Falter, the Phillies starting pitcher. And you're just starting to see, Devers had been slipping and was starting to flirt with, you know, the Mendoza line. And luckily, as all of that was happening with him, the Red Sox were still surging all around him to basically become the number one offense in Major League Baseball. So it wasn't, it really was a non-story because we were killing it. And, you know, Devers has quietly turned it back around. He's got his average back up to 250. Like to see him draw a few more walks. Typically, he's a pretty high on-base guy. Did not even walk one single time all weekend, but was still 4-for-11 on the series and drove in three runs overall. I think Tristan Casas was the only home run for the series, if I'm not mistaken. So we weren't putting him over the fence very much, but yeah, I liked what I saw from Devers, and he had a great start to April. You know, it was one of these years he's going to compete for an MVP. You know, he's always a top 10 guy, roughly, which you'll take. You know, that's a $30 million a year player if that's who you are perennially. But I'd love to see him get in that conversation.
Cody.
Terry made a lot of great points, right? You know, Devers is a perennial league leader in extra base hits, whether it be doubles or home runs or RBIs. He was kind of coming off the skids a little bit, right? You know, as Terry had mentioned, he was flirting with the Mendoza line. One of the things that I think we've seen with him this year that has been unlike previous years is he seems to be pressing at the plate a little bit more than years past. Years past, he'd let a pitch or two go by, kind of, you know, size up the pitcher, figure out what's going on, and either muscle a home run or flip one the opposite way that, you know, ends up squeaking out where you're like, that get off the end of the bat? What happened there? This effortless power that, you know, him and Big Papi Sr., as Terry would, I guess, like to say in the scenario, seem to possess. But it seems like he's swinging earlier in at-bats. He's, you know, having 3, 4, 5 pitch at-bats a lot more frequently, and he's trying to do all of his damage in one swing. Towards the end of that Blue Jays series, you know, he really seemed to, I wouldn't say change his approach, but shifted a little bit more. And I think we started to see that with the double on the home run in that finale, as well as, you know, having a more productive series here in Philadelphia. Another thing to mention, right? You know, Casas was the only one that left the yard, and it was a solo pop, but that's not how this team is necessarily built, right? Yeah, like Yoshida will go yard occasionally, and, you know, really the home run power is going to come from the likes of a Devers or a Duvall or a Story when they return. But this team still puts up runs, right? You know, this is that relentless offense that we were sold over the offseason, and it's good to see it work. And this team is going to go as far as Rafi goes, right? Because he is that guy that can leave a yard in a moment's notice. And when he gets going, it's a sight to see, and it's a lot of fun to watch. So it's good to see him kind of shake off that mini slump and get back to the Rafi that we know and love.
Charlie is frozen again. Still having Wi-Fi signals. Let me ask you a question, Cody. Would you rather see Devers hit 35 home runs or 45 doubles? Which is going to help the team the most?
I would say 35 home runs from Devers would help the team more than 45 doubles. I think he is the big bopper in the lineup. I think he's the guy that's, you know, kind of tapped as the base clearer per se. It depends upon where they bat him in the lineup, right? If he's batting two, then the 45 doubles, but if they move him down a little bit more like they have been, then the 35 homers.
So Devers is on pace to hit record number of home runs, record number of RBIs, his double numbers are going to be really high up there too. But like you already mentioned, it just feels like he's swinging for a home run every single time. His batting average is way down. He's been told no more stealing bases. We don't want to run the risk of having that happen. He's on pace to hit less than 40 doubles, like maybe 30, 35 doubles at this rate, because he's swinging for a home run every single time. It's insane. If he has a 4-for-11 week, three singles, a double, 3-4 RBIs, I'm not going to complain. I know he's going to have weekends and weeks where he's going to be more productive. So I'm not going to get too down on the fact that Devers had an off day. That's it. So off weekend, however you want to look at it, I'm okay with it. This is someone he's got to be top three, top four in RBIs. He's first, or I think Max Muncy is the only player in Major League Baseball with more home runs than he does. So again, this is like a sure bet stud, series in and series out.
I just think he's going to ultimately drive in more runs if he's hitting extra bases, much like he did on Saturday. So that's kind of why I would lean towards that. Mark DeRosa was the Team America WBC manager, and he's weekly on an MLB show called MLB Central. And there's a soundbite of him from a few years ago, and they still play it to this day. And he's talking about offense in general, and he says, everything in moderation except bullets up the gap. And that's what I want to see. I just feel like a lot of damage can be done. And I think that's why the Red Sox are so good offensively. You see the Blue Jays and the Phillies and even the Orioles a little bit in the most recent series, they're flying out to the warning tracks a lot. And the Red Sox just want to make decent contact, put it in play, don't try to do too much. And I think that mindset is why we're thriving right now. You don't see Verdugo trying to crush it every time, or Justin Turner. You're seeing the same type of situational hitting with Reese McGuire and even Duran. He's not trying to crush it anymore. He's just trying to drive that ball. You're seeing it with Yoshida, and I just think that's why the Red Sox are just exceeding everybody's expectations. They're just smarter. They have a higher IQ in the batter's box, and I think the rest of the team, the rest of the league, is just falling behind on that.
You brought up go ahead, Cody.
I would say it's refreshing to hear Terry talk positively about the approach of the Red Sox. I just wanted to comment on it. Give credit where credit's due. Sorry, Charlie, you were saying?
No, I mean, absolutely great point. Terry mentioned something about Tristan Casas being the only guy that hit the home run. He was the only home run, and it happened. He cut the lead in half. It went from 2-0 to 2-1. Unfortunately, we didn't win the third game of the series. But I'm okay with you guys playing small ball baseball and winning games. I don't care. Like, I don't need to see five home runs a game with nobody on base. I'd rather see, a 4-5-6-2, 6-3, 7-3 game where we have one home run or no home runs and just a boatload of doubles. I believe it was last year that JD Martinez was on fire with doubles to start the season. If it wasn't last year, it was the year before that. He just was on a tear. And then all of a sudden he was like, nah, I'm not doing doubles anymore. I'm going to try to hit home runs. No, like, you were doing so great as the doubles guy. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you don't win eight games by accident. Yes, some luck has to go your way. And the Red Sox have done very, very well, as mentioned on TV, on the radio. We have a lot of come from behind victories. I'm okay with that. I don't care. We finally have the luck falling our way after, several years of it going the wrong way. And they're having fun. So I'm not going to complain.
Good. Let's see.
Yeah.
Who's next? I think Cody.
Cody. Yeah, Cody, who's your stud?
So my stud for this series, like you guys had mentioned with Devers, is going to be Kenley Jansen. You know, he's a guy that's going to get a lot of credit, I think, knock on wood, throughout the entire season. A consummate professional, a guy that just goes out there and gets the job done. Again, two save opportunities, two save converted, right? Four strikeouts out of six outs got. And it's just, I feel like a broken record at this point. It's such a relief to know that when he's on the mound, knock on wood, chances are things are going to go smoothly, right? We have yet to see what it looks like when it all blows up in his face. But even if he gets guys on base, it's not like his cadence changes. You know, he's not yanking pitches. He's not losing his control. He's still going to be able to battle back and throw, you know, a high heat to put guys away, right? The at-bat he had against Turner was remarkable. You know, bottom of the ninth, game's hanging in the balance, and you got, you know, I believe it was the tying running at the plate, if not the go-ahead run, and, you know, just comes back, strikes him out on four pitches. And it's just so refreshing through, you know, the bullpen woes that we've had in years past to know that we just got a guy at the back end that's going to lock it down. And, you know, if Bleier is, you know, the anchor that we got to be, quote unquote, saddled with to get Barnes out of this bullpen so that we know who the closer is, then that's fine with me. You know, I'll have different takes on him later on in the show. But Kenley, again, you know, is just a guy that I think gives confidence and gives defined roles to the other players in the bullpen and allows them to go out and execute better as opposed to trying to vie for a closer spot or, you know, press pitches and end up, you know, overexerting themselves. So he's my stud for this week.
Terry.
I've said a lot of nice things about Jansen, and I've gone into how it's so great to have basically an automatic save in the ninth inning. And he's continued to be that guy. I know he did have one, finally his first blip against the Guardians, and we didn't even lose the game as a result of it. It just went into extra innings, and then the Red Sox ultimately did win. But it's just, you look at where we were last year, all the anxiety we had in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, and when you can at least solve the ninth inning, the rest of it just falls into place. It really does. You know who you have available, and we've got tons of weapons right now. You know, you can use Chris Martin, who's had a pretty good start. Got hurt for a couple weeks there, but has come back with no ill effects. Schreiber doesn't look quite as good as he was last year, but still very effective. Still a guy I trust coming out of that pen. And, of course, Winkowski has been phenomenal. You know, just a complete revelation as a potential high-leverage back-end guy. And I just think it makes their lives a lot easier knowing that Kenley's going to come in and get it done in the ninth. You don't have to put them in roles that are going to be, you know, too much pressure. So love the continued dominance from Jansen.
We have not had this kind of shut the door guy in the ninth inning in what feels like probably since Craig Kimbrell when he was locked down, or Koji Uehara before him. And it's so refreshing, such a nice breath of fresh air to know we don't have to worry about the ninth inning. Yeah, one blip, but you know what? Even if he blows one save every month, that's fine. That's still a lot better than blowing one save every series or one series every week. Or one game every week. So I'm super happy that we got Jensen. Some people thought this was a bad move, which, you know, not every move is going to be a bad move. You can't get every all-star. And in my opinion, this is an all-star closer. This is a guy that if you have him in there, you are not going to be disappointed. And he has the chance to strike out the side. That cutter is lethal. That is an absolute disgusting pitch. He needs a permit to throw that. It's just insane. And this is a guy who I thought there's a possibility that the Red Sox could have the AL saves leader on their team. This is not going to be a guy who pitches every single game. We're not going to have too many save opportunities. I will admit this 8-game stretch is great, but you know, in a 4-game set or a 3-game set, you're going to hopefully get one save opportunity minimum. You're going to bring in Jensen. You're going to shut the door. You're going to get those saves. I did feel that Jensen had the opportunity to get 45 saves as a member of the Red Sox in year one. I think it's a possibility. I'm not going to doubt it.
And let me also remind everyone, we have Jansen under contract through next season. So it's not even a 1-year thing. And I'm just pulling up the saves lead right now just to see where we're at with that. So Jansen,
he's actually tied for third. There's two guys with nine. There's two guys with nine, and there's one with 11.
Actually, I'm showing he's showing sixth, which is essentially four. So Emmanuel Clase, who's probably the, you know, one of the better closers for the Guardians anyway. 12, Josh Hader up there towards the top every year. Year in and year out, I keep waiting for him to flame out, and he hasn't, to his credit. Still, you know, probably will be one of the best closers of this decade even. He's got 11. David Bednar with the first place Pirates has 9. Jordan Romano with the Blue Jays has also 9. Red Sox walked him off, though. That was great. Paul Sewald,
Seattle's guy.
Yeah, Seattle's
guy. That's Seattle's closer.
We'll just call him the Seattle guy. He's got, he's in the three-way tie with 9. Then finally, Jansen. But the Red Sox offense has just been so potent, so explosive. You know, that takes opportunities away from Jansen. And then, you know, Chris Sale's and Corey Kluber, when they, the handful of times they've been lit up, that's going to take opportunities away as well.
So I should have been more specific when I said that, because when I said third, I meant the American League. And that was to that point earlier that I was talking, and that's my fault. I should have been more specific. That's my fault. Gotcha. Cause you couldn't have understood that if I didn't explain it. Emmanuel Clase is one of the most explosive closers, but one thing he's really struggling with is he's not striking anybody out this year. Like he's not getting strikeouts the way that he did last year and the year before. He's getting saves. He's given up home runs. All the closers have given up home runs. Jansen's the only one that hasn't. I have not seen Kenley Jensen give up a home run yet. So I know that for a fact. He's only given up one run, and the only run he gave up was in a game that he stated my back doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel great. So there's a chance that maybe if he wasn't playing in that game, maybe he still has an ERA of 0. He's that good.
True. Absolutely.
Right on. Cody, was there anything else you want to add? No? All right, great. I'm so looking forward to this. I hope everyone is sitting down. I hope everyone has their seatbelts on. This is going to be great. This is going to be a biblical moment and a humbling moment for some of the people that we know and some of the zeros out there that think that they know a little bit more than some of.
Unfortunate for Charlie to drop when he's on a soapbox.
It's the third time. Okay, he's back. Hopefully.
He was so excited about that promo. He drove all the way from California to get bad Wi-Fi in Rhode Island.
That's awful. That's so bad. That's so crappy. Here we go. So we're doing something with the bandwidth. If this happens again, I'm literally going to turn on the hotspot on my phone because I'm getting frustrated. Anyways, Chris Sale was my stud in the series. Chris Sale, who went 6 innings and struck out 10 guys. And after 3 innings and 1 hit, I believe 1 walk and 5 strikeouts, someone close to us that we like, that we enjoy chatting with, said, "Oh, back to the old Chris Sale." And I said, "Damn it, the game's not even over yet. This is not even done." Guy ends up going another 3 innings, strikes out another 5, allows 1 more run, a couple more hits, almost 100 pitches, lights out Chris Sale. Old Chris Sale is back. And we have a lot of like zeros out there that think that there's somebody that, you know, we're still trying to see if they're really relevant out there in the Red Sox fan base community. But I've been a Chris Sale supporter since day one. He could have a blip or two or whatever, and he's had games where, you know, the strikeouts just aren't working. But that pitch was electric. He was throwing 98. I think I saw one hit 99 when he was pitching. It felt like vintage Chris Sale. And yes, I know that consistency is key, and that's a part of the game, and you guys definitely want to see a little bit more before we call it what it is. I'm pumped. I'm really excited because I loved seeing what I saw from Chris Sale in the first game of this series. Came out and gave us classic Chris Sale. Cody, I'm going to let you go first with your input here.
I believe when we did our bold takes for the season, one of my bold takes was Chris Sale is going to win 15 games with a sub-3.5 ERA. I don't know if we have somebody out there tallying it down or whatnot. So for me, this was just a sight for sore eyes. I'd love to see this. This guy's starting to stack together good outings. You know, he had the great outing against, I believe it was Minnesota, with the 11 strikeouts. And he, you know, he had, we'll call it a subpar by Chris Sale standards outing his next time out. But then, you know, for him to be able to bounce back was great. And a thing that was perhaps even more encouraging for me to see was in that fourth inning, right? When things started to go off the rails a little bit, he gave up those 3 runs. The infield was like, whoa, guys, let's slow it down. Let's not let this get away from us like it has in years past. You know, he's only made a handful of starts over the last couple of seasons, and he was able to settle back down, you know, get out of that inning, and like you said, Charlie, finish those next couple of innings off rather remarkably. And, you know, I think that's something that we're hopefully going to start to see out of him a little bit more, right? This guy runs so high, so hot all the time that if it does start going off the rails a bit, he generally does implode, or, you know, has a flame out to that start. So for him to be able to kind of calm it down, recenter, refocus, and close out that outing, end up having it become a quality start, hand the ball over to the bullpen for a win was just wonderful to see.
Terrence?
I got to say nice things about Chris Sale. So it was a pretty good outing. I mean, if he's only going to give up three, I mean, given what he's been through, you're going to take that every time. First inning, you know, three up, three down, a couple of ground outs made it a quick inning. Second inning, he did give up a single to JT Realmuto. Other than that, got through it pretty much unscathed. And actually, he did have an assist from Machine Gun Wong in that inning by gunning down a base runner. So that was good. And three up, three down again in the third, and then all kinds of mischief in the fourth. I don't know what was going on there, but Bryson Stott singled, then Trey Turner singled, and then Bryce Harper walked, who is off to a phenomenal start. He didn't have any rehab starts. He has not played since the playoffs last year, no rehab starts, and he's just crushing it right now. Hit one home run. I think it was later on this game, don't quote me, but did hit a home run in the series. And then Nick Castellanos, my boy, Charlie hates him, but that's fine. Drove in one, kind of on a fielder's choice, force out. And then, Schwarber singled, all kinds of mischief, but then finally, you know, the three runs came in and he got a fly out, from JT Realmuto, and then a ground out from Alec Boehm. And then I thought, I was listening on the radio, and I thought, okay, this is where it all unravels for Sale. It's the second time through. They kind of have an idea. They know it's coming. And then, but the blip was over, three up, three down in the fifth. And then in the sixth, Schwarber hit the home run. Okay, my bad. But that wasn't off a what's his name anyway. So, but yeah. So anyway, good outing for Sale, and liked what I saw.
You know, I think the real telling thing for me was the third inning of that appearance. He hits Sosa on like the fourth or fifth pitch with a fastball up and in, and he gets over to second base on a pass ball, and you slowly but surely seeing what could be like, here we go. And at no point was I nervous, was I concerned, did I think, all right, cool, we're in big trouble, because it's Chris bleeping Sale, and he did what he is gonna do. Like, this is Vincent Sale. Guthrie comes up, he goes down swinging. Schwarber goes up, he struck out a lot, and he goes down by way of the sinker. And then Turner comes up, he sits him down, a mix of changeups and fastballs, only threw like one or two sliders in that inning, and he was just going power fastball, power sinker, and that was it. It wasn't the pitch that everyone was expecting. He didn't throw the slider as much as everybody thought. Everyone thinks he's a fastball slider guy. No. I think this was just the appearance that Chris Sale needed to have his coming out party. I really could not wait to see how many strikeouts he was going to pile on, because he just looked so good in that appearance. So really happy with that. Anything else that either one of you guys wanted to add?
No.
Right on. Any honorable mentions that you guys had in particular? Terry, was there any one honorable mention you wanted to mention?
Well, actually, I meant to mention with Chris Sale. I still don't understand what happened, but before the game, this was, I think, Saturday night, Cutter Crawford and Matt Strom had this stare down and refused to stop staring down. Both got ejected. And apparently with Crawford, where he's on the injured list, he's going to basically be subject to a larger fine. So Chris Sale's going to cover that fine for him.
Yeah.
And yeah. Other than that, I mean, all three starting pitchers, they all gave up exactly three earned runs. So not bad. But that's about all I have.
For Cody, if I can, I'm going to interject with one right here, and that's Massa. Dude, he just continues the hitting streak. It's up to, I believe, 16 after today. Kind of an ugly start, though, because he got on base, and then he kind of made the gesture that he was going over to second that got picked off against, you know, one of the better catchers in baseball, and you're not going to pull a fast one by Real Muto. And he tried to get a little cheeky, and it didn't end up working out in his favor. But I'm still super impressed and super proud with what I've seen from Masahiro Tanaka. Masataka Yoshida, excuse me. And I think this is just the beginning. I think he's now also found his groove. And it's all of these players that I think we were kind of unsure about, and it just needed a month. They just needed a little bit of time. And now they've had it. They're making the adjustments they need. Chris Sale's throwing more than just sliders and fastballs. Massa's seeing literally everything well. He's getting on base. He's doing everything. He had multiple multi-hit games. The other guy was Tapia. Tapia came in and scored, I think it was 5 runs in 2 games. Like, just incredible. This is a guy who people are like, yeah, we can send him down. He's just, we don't need him anymore. Those are my two. Cody, anybody else you want to add?
Well, I was going to, you know, give a tip of the cap to Massa. Obviously, you know, a guy that's on a hitting streak like he's on right now has to be mentioned, whether, you know, he's a stud or an honorable mention. But yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to give Ramel Tapia his credit as well, because he's just affecting the game, you know, on the box sheet, or just, you know, just being on the base path, you know, putting the ball in play and just creating havoc with speed. And you know, he's kind of like an X factor or a dynamic guy that, you know, the Red Sox don't typically have on their team, but is one that is what we're starting to see at the elk of the team of the 2023 season, right? I don't know, trying to put the ball in play, do whatever it takes to get on base, and then from there, let's just see what happens. And you know, he was the perfect embodiment of that this series. Like you said, you know, 5 runs in 2 games. You can't do that by accident. And so it's just good to see him get some consistent playing time and be able to affect the team in a positive way.
And just to be specific, it was the first he scored 3 runs at the end of the last series. First two runs were the beginning of this series, but still 5 runs from somebody who no one expected to score 5 runs in 2 games. I think 5 runs in a week, 2 weeks would have been a lot for what we thought he would do. And he's like, no, hold my beer. How about 2 games? So I think it's important to be able to talk about you know, the highlights there. Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he is on a 16-game streak, like Cody was just referring to. Here's some notable streaks. I posted this on social media. We all know Joe DiMaggio, 56, untouchable. That'll probably never, no one will ever sniff that. The most this century, and I wasn't aware of this until I looked it up, in the 21st century, the person who hit the most, do you have any ideas to who that was, Charlie?
Jackie Bradley Jr. I think he was at 27.
I'm talking across MLB.
Oh.
Who do you think it might have been?
How many years are we going back?
Oh, I forget what year it was. Probably at least maybe right around 15 or so.
15 years?
Yeah.
This is going to sound like a weird one. I'm going to go completely random. Not a member of the Red Sox.
Oh, right. No, correct.
Is it Troy Tulowitzki?
No, Jimmy Rollins of the Phillies.
Oh, shoot. Okay, what was it?
He hit 38 of them. So that, wow, that's the most in the 21st century by any player. The most this century of any Red Sox player. It's actually a tie between Jackie Bradley Jr. and Johnny Damon, who had his run in 2005. They're both tied at 29. And if you're wondering who the most in Red Sox history was, and I would have assumed it was, you know, Teddy Ballgame or, you know, one of those guys back in the day. And it's Dom DiMaggio, who I think did play in that era, but he hit 34. So 34 games in a row is the most of any Red Sox player. And so it's kind of weird. His brother's the all-time MLB leader, and he's the all-time Red Sox leader. So
that's pretty remarkable. I remember that JBJ had the record, and I remember that they took him out of like the 8 or 9 hole and put him in the leadoff hole, and then he lost his hitting streak after being promoted to the one hole of that following game. So for those that were looking for that little bit of information, I do remember them talking about it. Like, why did they do that? Why change something that isn't broken? Just let him stay in the same spot. He's doing his job. But that is what it is.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to add before we move on to duds? No? Perfect. All right. Terry, why don't you hit us with your dud for the series?
My dud for the series is a certain infielder who went 0 for 10. 4 strikeouts, not a great series. He's been kind of cool in the last few weeks, and that is the red-headed stepfather, a.k.a. Justin Turner. He can't be the stepchild. He's like almost as old as me, for crying out loud. But not a great series for him. Was it consequential? Not really, because we won the series regardless, 2-1. And weirdly, one of his strikeouts, he was due to the new hitting rules. He wasn't looking at the pitcher in the last 8 seconds. So you would think he would kind of be settled into that rhythm right now. And he questioned it. I forget who the home plate umpire was. It didn't get too intense, but there was a discussion. Cora came out, made sure it was going to stay cool, and Turner eventually just went back to the dugout. So, yeah.
Cody.
Who's my stud?
I mean, not much to say, right? He was just kind of a non-factor the whole weekend. I feel like, you know, a lot of these games were ho-hum games, and he's a guy that kind of disappeared into the box score. And that's going to happen from time to time, right? You know, Rafi was doing it for a while there, except for you notice it when Rafi doesn't produce. And, you know, when Turner doesn't produce, sure, you're going to notice it because you're expecting production, but it's definitely not to the same expectations. You know, it's good to see that the team was still able to pick up 2 out of 3 without him, but we're going to be able to do a lot more damage in, you know, hopefully the postseason if he's able to contribute more than an 0 for 10.
We lose Charlie.
There we go. Yep. Couldn't hit unmute. So 0 for 10 in the series, 7 for 14 in the series before. You go from hitting 500 to nothing. You're 7 for 24 in the last two series. That's just a shade underneath 300, if my math is correct. 7 for 24. It's like 290 or 289, something like that. I'm not concerned. I'm not worried. He's had a couple of RBIs in the month of May. He had an RBI in the series. I believe it was the first game of the three-game set. I'm okay with this. I'm okay with the fact that he'll have like a slow series. If you can, I'd like it to be a little bit more consistent, but let's not forget in the series before he had 3 multi-hit games in a row. So I'm not concerned about Turner on this. That's just my 2 cents. Anything else that we wanted to add on Turner?
Nope.
Nope. Cool. Straight. Cody, who'd you have?
Yeah, like you mentioned with Turner, right? You know, not necessarily to continue on that, but the team's firing on all cylinders right now, right? Like it's hard to be worried. It's hard to beat these guys down because, you know, it seems like at least enough people are clicking each night to pick up others that might not be. And, you know, the team's obviously playing a very good brand of baseball. We're going to segue that into Blyer being my dud for this series. You know, he had a good first outing, taking the ball from Sale. I believe it was a scoreless outing with 1 strikeout, but the reason he's my dud for this one is he came into the game, took the ball from Houck in Game 3. You know, the game was very much, you know, in the balance, right? I think it was 2-1 at that point, and he just promptly gives up a no-doubter to Schwarber that really kind of put the game away. I think it stretched it to 4-1 at that point. You know, this team is resilient. It is got the league lead, I believe, for come from behind wins at, I think, 11, which coincidentally is the same number as the amount of times they've knocked out the opposing starting pitcher before the fourth inning. It's tough, right? You had a chance to sweep the team, go into the next series against the Braves, I believe, with even more momentum, stretch the league leading win streak, and just to kind of give up a deflating home run earns the dud for the week for me.
Terry.
Richard Blyer is a champion among the Bluminati. They love to defend that move, but I'm not going to get too hard on him. You know, he's had, let's see, in 5 out of his 14 games, he has given up an earned run. One of those games was 4 runs. So that's kind of why his earned run average is inflated a little bit, but I'm just not super impressed. I mean, he's more of a finesse guy. He's not going to blow you away. And at the end of the day, I guess I'd rather be a little annoyed by Richard Blyer than I would be by Matt Barnes eventually, because that got old. So,
yeah, it got old real fast. Not too much to add to what Cody just said. He comes in and just moments later, just promptly gives a gift to Kyle Schwarber, no longer from Boston, who hits a moonshot. I think it was like 420 feet to center field. So that put the game out of reach. You know, you go from 2-1, 4-1, and then I think it was Realmuto got the 2-run single there at the end, made it 6-1 in the third game of the set. You know, he's had some seasons. If you look at his numbers in the past, he's pitched for a couple of different teams. He's never been a strikeout guy. Terry just mentioned he's a finesse guy, not going to blow anybody away. But it is tough to see a guy pitch one inning and need to throw 20 times in that inning. It's just very unsexy. And he's on that list of unsexy pitchers. He's going to labor a little bit. I mean, a third of an inning, he gave up a moonshot. I don't know if I'm ever going to be a supporter of Blyer here. I think he could potentially be on the short list for dud. For you know, sets and shows that we're going to do together. I don't think he's nearly as bad as the guy that I hated pitching for the Red Sox. And this is BC. This is before Cody. he was my Terry. I believe my line was he wasn't my dud for the series. He wasn't my dud for the month. He was my dud for the year. He was just that bad.
Matt Hall.
Do you remember who it was?
Matt Hall.
It wasn't Matt Hall. It was Matt Hall to start. And then after Matt Hall, we had another guy that the Bluminati really, really liked. Do you remember who it was?
What season was this?
This is a couple seasons ago. He came in and everyone thought he was going to be the second coming of Christ.
Garrett Richards?
Garrett Richards, baby.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't stand him. He was so bad. Garrett Richards is so bad. So that was another BC pick. But yeah, Cody, anything you want to add to Blyer there?
I mean, Terry mentioned it. You know, I couldn't care less if this guy gets no more appearances for the rest of the season. He got Matt Barnes off of his team, and for that, I'll be forever grateful. Matt Barnes was an awful experiment. He had one good season, and we kept putting him out in high leverage situations. We know not to do that with Richard Blyer, and I'm fine. I'm good.
Yeah.
Let's keep it moving.
Yeah, we're aligned. My dud for this series is Jarren Duran. I know this is going to be a little bit of a hot one because Duran's been able to do so much, but, you know, Justin Turner, 0 for 10. Jarren Duran, only one more hit better, 1 for 11 in that little set. Struck out a couple times, had a single, a run scored. But, again, this is the same kind of thing. If you can continue to produce week in and week out, I'm okay just saying, all right, you had a bad week, you're my dud. And I'm okay with it. And I'm just going to leave it there. Terry, anything you want to add to Jarren Duran?
He only struck out 3 times the whole series. So it's not like we're seeing a notable regression here. If he goes on to have a couple of bad series or maybe 3, it's important for us to see that he can bounce back from that, that he can pull himself out of that, because he wasn't able to do that in any of his previous stints. And I want Jaren Duran to succeed. I really do. I mean, he annoyed me a little bit last year with, you know, complaining about Boston fans being too tough on him. And I you never want to hear that. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm not really concerned at this point.
Cody.
I mean, take what you said about Justin Turner, rinse, repeat, apply to Jaren Duran, right? It's one bad series. He can't be on, you know, he's not going to hit 400 for an entire season. If he was, I mean, let's bring in the Teddy ball game comparisons, and that'd be, you know, a whole other conversation that I think all of us would thoroughly enjoy having. But yeah, it's one bad series, you know, and as, you know, Terry made another great point that I was going to make was, how does he bounce back from this, right? Because this is so much of a confidence type player where, you know, he came in hot, played well at his first call up last year, and then hit the skids and was never really able to recover. So how is he going to do it if he has a little bit of a slump here, you know, if he hits the skids for a while? Because I think he reached base in every game that he had played in since he'd been called up, which is just an incredible streak considering, you know, he wasn't the best contact hitter last year. So I'm not worried about it. You know, hopefully the guy bounce back and has a great series, you know, either against Atlanta or St. Louis, and we get the ship rolling again.
So I'm going to throw this bit, and here's the thing. The reason why I'm not going to really harp on Jaren Duran is Jaren Duran has been in Boston for obviously less than a month. He's only played 20 games in Boston. In relation to Wander Franco and Matt Chapman, those are the only two guys in Major League Baseball in the American League that have more doubles than Jaren Duran. Matt Chapman has 17 doubles in 126 at-bats. Wander Franco has 14 in 134 at-bats. You can slash that number in half for Jaren Duran. He's had 71 at-bats, and he's had 11 doubles. That's why it's just so easy to say, you know what, he had a bad week. I'm okay with it. Moving on. Because the guy's a doubles machine right now, and he's been able to make the adjustments. And I'm pleasantly surprised, because I know I was real big down on him. Jason and I last year were very down on him, because it was a nightmare. I mean, the comments that he made after the Toronto series were bad. But you know what? It's a new year. It's clearly a new Jaren Duran. So let's move forward, shall we? As far as, you know, other duds in the series, I know that we have like special, you know, we have a couple of extras on there. Tanner Houck, I don't want to say was a dud. Like, I don't want to, you know, nominate him for like a dud this series. But that reliever that we had, Zach Littell or Little, whatever, you know, he just it was a bad first look for him against Philly. He's had one appearance and already has given up two runs. So his ERA, while it will definitely come down, you know, much lower than, you know, Hall's. It's at 18 right now, but I'm sure he'll bounce back. That was the real one notable, because there weren't really that many duds in the series. Like, we had a really, really good series. And I think it's really important to highlight the highs. The highs are really high, and sometimes the lows are really low. And this was a high series. So there aren't going to be too many duds. Were there any other honorable or dishonorable mentions you guys want to mention?
Yeah, I do have one. The fan that fell over the railing and into the Red Sox bullpen. I don't want to say they were badly injured, but there was clearly some Red Sox relievers that were shaken up. And what happened was the fan was trying to retrieve a ball that landed on the flower bed, which sits below the, I don't know what you call it, that level that they're on. And she, or he rather, was trying to reach over it and let go of the railing, ended up crashing. It looked like it was probably about 15 feet or so, which is pretty high.
It's high.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad. And it was bad.
You know, when they're landing on concrete. And in watching the game, you could see, spacing here, John Schreiber looked really shaken up. You could see that he was pretty traumatized by what he just saw. And then there was a quote from Josh Winkowski that he was initially concerned that the fan had died. So initially it didn't look good, but as the fan was being stretchered off, it appeared to be a male, an adult male. And they put him, yeah, they had to carry him down the steps and onto the, basically the warning track out in, towards center field. And as they put him on the cart even, and as the cart was going, you could see him talking with, the medical personnel, moving, his arms and legs and lifting up his head even. So, it could have been worse.
He's pretty bad. It could have been much worse. It was very badly bloodied, like you mentioned, Terry. And if you, I don't know if you, either one of you guys have ever seen Citizens Bank in Philly. I went to school in Philadelphia for a year, so I'm pretty familiar with the stadium. That's not a small fall. That's not like a, oop, I just fell down two stairs. 5 feet hurts. 10 feet, ouch. 15, even worse. So, you know, we naturally, as a fellow fan for a different team, you pray that he's okay and he'll you know, be all right, bounce back. And I'm sure he'll, you know, the Phillies will probably have him throw out the first pitch at a game later on this year once he's fully recovered. But yeah, that was brutal. And understandably so. I think all three of us would be pretty shaken if we saw something like that. Just a grown man fall 15 feet. That's pretty intimidating. So I think on that, what we'll do is we will wrap it and go into our upcoming series. So the first series, it's a 2-game set against Atlanta here. And I have Pivetta against Charlie Morton. Is that who you have?
Yes, that is who I have.
Okay. All right. And who do you have taking game one?
You know, it's this is an interesting matchup. I'm sad that it's only 2 games because Atlanta's just a fun team to watch. But, you know, Charlie Morton's been having his typical, you know, Charlie Morton type season. You know, he's got his ERA in the threes, basically putting together a lot of quality starts. And, you know, the Braves have been, you know, one of the best teams in the National League now going on the last 3 or 4 years. It's a very balanced team, and it's uncomfortable. I'm actually going to go with the Red Sox here. You know, Pivetta's been pretty solid the last few times out. And Morton, not an overpowering guy. I think the Red Sox are going to put the ball in play. We've hit him fairly well over the last few years, so I don't see why that won't continue. So me being Mr. Positive and appeasing the Bluminati, I will pick the Boston Red Sox to take the first game.
That's adorable, Terrence. I love it. Cody, who do you have game one?
Yeah, this is like doing a whole new podcast with a different co-host right now. This is wonderful. I got Pivetta and the Red Sox taking game one as well. It's an interesting stat line if you look at Charlie Morton's career against the Red Sox. I believe he's 7-1 against us in 13 appearances, but his ERA is north of 4, right? So, you know, was he on good teams that kind of had our number, or, you know, was he shutting us down, right? Because you obviously have to be good against a team to beat them 7 out of 13 times. But the ERA over 4 gives me hope. And, you know, this reconstructed Red Sox lineup that's going to put the ball in play, that's going to get that pitch count up. I like our opportunities. You know, obviously Atlanta's lineup likes to hit home runs, and Pivetta is susceptible to it. But I think he's going to keep us in the ball game long enough. He bounces back from giving up a couple of early moonshots. And so I like the Red Sox in game one.
So Terry didn't want to be Terry tonight, and I it's fine. That's
so,
okay.
So Charlie's going to be Terry.
I'm going to be Terry here. All right. So Charlie Morton, we're going to talk about numbers, right? So Charlie Morton is 7-1 against the Red Sox in his career. 7-1. I have no reason to believe that he wants to double up on his losses number this year. So I'm going to go full Terry here and say that the Red Sox will lose game one, which I'm okay with, because I think it's going to be a split. And I'm therefore giving you that the second game, which I believe we have Brian Baio pitching. I think we're going to win regardless of who we're facing. I've been picking matchups, and I think we've all been picking matchups thinking, okay, we're just going on the history of the pitcher and that's it. We're not really thinking about like the outliers and little things that could potentially pop up and whatnot. I just feel really, really good about game two. I think Charlie Morton has our number as he's had in the past. So I'm going to say that the Red Sox lose game one, we win game two. Terry, who do you have for Atlanta pitching game two? Because I don't see anybody listed for ESPN.
You know what? Nobody is listed on
nobody's listed. Okay.
MLB. Huh. I wonder. So ESPN doesn't have it either.
ESPN does not have it. I have Brian Baio going for the Red Sox, and I like Baio. So I'm going to go Baio in game two, regardless of who's pitching for Atlanta. It could be whomever. It doesn't matter. Like, I feel that confident against, I just feel confident with Baio. Cody, I know we don't have a known definitive starter. Is there somebody, do you think that the Red Sox can split this, or do you think the Red Sox will get both?
Unless it's Spencer Strider, I like the Red Sox taking both of them.
Okay. Terry?
Well, I don't really, I'm uncomfortable with Baio because the batting average for the opponents goes up 30, 40, 50 points each time the order goes through. So he hasn't seemed to figure out how to adjust as the batters in the batter's boxes are adjusting. And I just don't like him against that lineup. So I'm going to go with a split here, and I'll give the Braves that. Who knows? It might be a bullpen game. I have no idea who's going to be pitching that game.
You know, I was just looking online, and after Morton earlier this year, the guy who's pitching after Morton was Elder, but it looks like Elder is pitching after Strider now. So it looks like they manipulated their rotation just a hair. And maybe that's why we now no longer have a definitive guy for the second game of this series, because Elder was pitching after Morton. So that looks to have changed for Atlanta.
Apparently.
Anything else? Yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah, me neither. So I think that's going to wrap it for us tonight. We want to thank all of our loyal listeners, and to our first-time listeners as well. Thank you for joining us on our adventure. We appreciate all of you, whether this is your first time or 1,000th time. And whether you are listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we thank you. We appreciate you. Don't forget to subscribe. Everyone have a great night. Take care.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic-foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.